Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Four Center, a show about Star Wars pop culture in the ultimate adventure, life itself. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I am Ken Napzok.
And I am Jennifer Lando.
Oh, I didn't know we were getting away from contractions. I am Joseph Scrimshaw. And this episode is The Bad Batch Report. Was that the chime for the morning announcements in yes. The horrible cage of Mount Tantus?
Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. No connections are allowed in the specimen cage. Yes.
It was a lovely little ditty. What were you thinking?
Sometimes it's just a town crier announcing the news.
The sounds that come are the sounds that come, everybody. Yeah. We are excited to be here to discuss season 3, episode 13. Yes, 13, Into the Breach, directed by Saul Ruiz, written by Brad Rao. Some of the core team there, as always, story editor listed is Matt Machenovitz. We'll get right into it. Ken, what was your overall reaction to this episode? You love it, like it, struggle with it, shocked by it?
Shocked. The tension. I really enjoyed it. It's interesting that what they've been kind of doing in these last few episodes, there's not like a great standalone, you know, outpost episode. There's just mm-hmm. this collection of wonderful moments and tension and action, and we're building for something exciting. And I think I was really in on that. And I want to acknowledge, I saw on social media, I can't even remember the site, but someone, I don't know who, was complaining about the run times. That we're getting cheated out of, you know, we got 23 minutes, not counting credits and everything. And I get that, and I'm not taking away that anger from anyone. But I am so relieved that I can just sit down and watch these episodes and enjoy it and get through, get to the point and move on to the next. So a lot of more overall thoughts, but that was my general reaction.
I think that there should be an extended edition of this episode where we just watch Wrecker play on his data pad for like five yes. minutes straight is like a meditation. Superstar. That was super. Perhaps one of my favorite beats.
Will like a lo-fi video? Oh, that's great.
Yeah, like a lo-fi Ooh. Video of him, like the way he's kicking his foot and just like, I got it in the canon section just to put it out there. I want to discuss what we think Wrecker was doing on that little data pad because it totally looked like he was scrolling through Blue Sky and checking out the skeets. Love that so much. Ken, did you watch this morning? Did you have a leisurely opportunity to watch it or was it crammed amidst Chihuahua care?
Always with Chihuahua care. Baxter 17 now, and he now has Pampers, diapers that we have to put on daily. Not because he doesn't have people always like, well, when they go older, they lose control. No, he don't care no more. He goes where he wants to go. And so he has control. He just, but so I, that's always a thing. But no, I was able to, little cereal, little coffee, take this episode in this morning. Loved it.
A little cereal and adventure cereal. That's great. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, what was your reaction and your viewing experience like for this episode?
Overall, I really enjoyed the episode. I was surprised that it was the end of the episode. I went, that's it? Okay. But I'm not affected by the shortness of it per se. I mean, mm-hmm. that's pretty standard for all time. For sitcoms and half-hour shows, they've always been like, 21 minutes, with commercials?
22, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe people would like it if they did the Mandalorian type credits where we see some concept art or something like that. I don't know. Sure. But anyways, I really liked it. I liked it more than last week's episode with the tank. I thought the tension was amazing. And overall, excellent. Excellent.
Awesome. Awesome. I stayed up and watched it at midnight because I'm just really wanting to have the opportunity to sort of experience this as a fan. Because if I watch it in the morning, I can't stop myself from just starting to pause and take notes. And if I watch it at midnight, I'm tired enough that I just let it wash over me and then start kind of thinking about it. So and I watched it with my tech action figure, my Black Series, and turned him to face the screen just in case there are any surprises. And I think I'm trying to find the right words for it. I thought the episode was great. And, as we dig into the ideas, I thought there were a lot of great ideas and great tension. There's so much that I loved about it. I think it's maybe sort of defying expectations in a way that I'm not bothered by, but I have to be honest that it's defying expectations. I think I keep expecting this sort of ramp up to a titanic conclusion, and maybe we'll still get there. Maybe we'll sit down to watch episode 15 and it'll be 90 minutes and it will be Fee shows up and Sid shows up and Asajj Ventress shows up, the title is something
Thor about shows up
a cavalry, right? But in some ways I think it's kind of defying expectations because it's kind of keeping it small and intimate, intense, and that it's really about this kind of OG dad batch family and Omega, as everybody jokingly called them at the beginning, that I think there is, it's not even about length or we only got that much story because this felt very complete and it felt very necessary and thematically rich. But I think I just kind of keep waiting for it to sort of explode and maybe it's not going to, and that's fine.
I really love that you said that, but a point before that, I'm like you, if the episode's on, I start taking notes. I've discovered if you put a big giant coffee mug of cereal in your hand, you can't take notes. You just have to have the cereal.
Just enjoy the episode. Jennifer, how do you feel about that, about in terms of like scale or stakes? Are you expecting it to sort of ramp up, or is that not something that you're wrestling with?
So it's episode 13. So we have 14, 15, 16, correct? We're up to 16.
No, just 14 and 15. Just 14,
that's 15. It. Okay. So the way that I see it is like with kids, if you're going to have like a big birthday party that you're going to in the afternoon, you know that it's going to be so much stimulation, chocolate, potentially candy, running around, mayhem. So in the morning prior to going, you're not going to go take them to the zoo. right? You're kind of set the tone. And the ramping up is a gentle ramp up to the big party. And that's kind of how I see this here, where it's like, I know I'm going to be so overstimulated that that last episode is going to be action packed from the beginning to the end. It's going to have so many reveals. I think episode 15 could have a little bit more of a ramp up, but I think next week might be similar to this week.
Mm, yeah.
They don't want to overstimulate us.
Yeah. Don't give Crosshair too much sugar before the finale. Yeah.
So wait. So I love this, Jed. This is wonderful. Are we heading to the zoo or are we at the zoo? Where are we at right now?
There's no zoo. No, we no zoo. We're only going to the birthday party, to the kids' birthday party where there's going to be a big bounce house with Wrecker in it. Oh, that's where we're headed.
Yeah. Okay.
We had a little birthday party for my nephew when he was, I don't know, 6, 7, 8. And there was a cake and he knew it. And the adults kept doing one more thing before the cake. And I thought the poor child was literally going to explode. Oh, and in a way, it feels like this of like, we know we're getting to the birthday cake of the clone freedom explosion, the Tantus derailment in theory. And I feel like, maybe I do feel like my nephew of like, I know there's a cake, come on. Like, which is fine, it's good. That's tension. I also just thought that this episode was really full of just individual pleasing moments of like great lines, great visuals. It felt like ramping up toward the finale in that they were quiet and reserved, but to me they were like big fist pumping moments that kind of even reminded me of like A New Hope or Return of the Jedi or Rise of Skywalker that have those kind of F yeah, the heroes are doing their thing moments. They were small and reserved, but I was really affected by how many fist pumping moments there were in this.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And continuing your point that you brought up, I marked this down too in my notes of I'm loving the concentration on story over lore and answers, but I do believe the answers are coming. And the great example for that for me in this episode was when Dr. Sadler is Dr. Skulder, played by Helen Sadler. Who does all the Rey voices and all the video game stuff. She's great. When she was coming down to Omega and that tension was building and, you know, Omega's, you know, in the cell doing stuff. I thought, is Omega going to be holding the wall up with the Force or something, right? For a second. I was like, oh, we're going to get this kind of thing. And then it's like, well, nope. She did something else. And we don't get that kind of reveal. And it doesn't mean that all these answers, like, is she super Force sensitive or not? All that stuff we've been talking about. And we like, you know, when we get to that bounce castle, Jen, I think it might come, but I think I really agree with you, Joseph, or understand what you're saying of, this is not what I was expecting for the end of the series. Like I was expecting a little more, this and that, but I'm enjoying that they're just like, no, we're telling this story. And that might not agree with everyone's desires for this series to end, how it's going to end. But I just, this was like classic Star Wars on tropes on display, the breaking in, the going undercover. And I've just, the slow build with Emery, that Emery's not yet being like, wink, I'm on your side. Like it's these little clues. So I really enjoying that, though I really am right there with you of like, okay, this is different. We're getting in the minivan. The party's not yet.
We can wait for that birthday cake. We only got two episodes to wait. I have one other big picture question, and then we can dive into the big ideas and themes. I also thought that the episode was effective in the kind of back half of really putting a spotlight on one of the, not only the OGs of the Dad Batch of Echo being, you know, a main character in a main, one of the many paternal figures to Omega, but also an OG clone from the Clone Wars, from getting to know clones better. He's one of the first that we met. We met him in his training when he had his name Echo because he was so anxious to do a good job. He reported repeated orders all the time. How did you feel about putting a little bit of a spotlight on him, Ken? And did it give you tension that Echo might not make it in this episode?
Well, I didn't think about that till right now. Echo might die. No, I've been thinking Echo might go for a bit, but I think you're right. There could be some t- tension ratcheting up with him. I did love it. I wrote the note. This is my detailed, insightful note. Love some Echo time. it was good to see him back. I've been having this fun and completely silly and not real theory in my head that the reason Echo kind of moved on from the team and wasn't a regular, you know, star, he's more of a recurring or a guest star coming in every now and then, was that Dee Bradley Baker was like, look, I can do nine voices at once. Just give me one off. Just give me one that I don't have to worry about. And to have Echo come back was really a wonderful reward this week. It made me think of, you know, what he and Rex have been doing, and we're gonna get those spin-off stories of them or anything like that. But I enjoyed him here today.
It's funny to imagine Dee Bradley Baker negotiating his contract as each individual clone, and Echo just demanded too much money. Record's like, I'm fine. But Echo's like, no, I need more and longer lunch breaks. Jennifer, how did you feel about the little bit of the Echo spotlight? Did it give you any tension for his safety during this episode?
Not at all. I didn't even think about that, which is now, of course, like you said, Ken, I'm thinking about it, but I was really happy to see him. It felt kind of warm and fuzzy to see his return. It felt like it was out of a movie. And that's another thing I think of. If I look at these last episodes, we're like at the end of the movie. It's just like little snapshots that we might get. So it's not going to be the full resolution because the movie's not over yet, which makes me think this might be interesting to watch. Not necessarily one sitting like I've done before, but maybe this last half could benefit from watching in one sitting and see how it kind of connects.
I think it's going to be really enjoyable to watch it, you know, a few episodes at a time, because then you don't have that tension of I've waited a week and I've wondered a week and I've read everybody else's theories. And it's you can just, I think, slow down and enjoy all of the beats and all of the moments and see the connections more clearly between episodes and all that. So, yeah, I can't wait to watch it with my wife, who has not watched a second of Bad Batch, and see, like, how quickly can we get through the entire series?
It does feel like a movie, Jen, too. Like, we're almost as if they said, you know, we're going to end this with some sort of movie, just going to break it up. It kind of feels
structurally, it is very much like they, you know, they hit the all is lost moment, and now they're building up to the big final conflict, third act moment. So, very exciting. All right, let's talk about big ideas, things that are at stake in the episode. Jennifer, what did you gravitate toward? What did this episode make you think about or feel?
That's a good question, because I should have thought about that. I would say how people have grown. Well, certainly Omega, how much she has grown, how the Bad Batch dads have really instilled so much confidence in her that she's now able to kind of flourish on her own and come up with these plans and feel empowered to be able to like be the leader of these kids. You really can see the contrast between these kids who were taken from their families, who still have some like kind of innocence, with her, where she's not hardened or disillusioned, but she's had to grow up fast. And she's also had to kind of test her limits, and she's learned, I can succeed. I can take these risks, and it does pay off. And I thought that was a really nice contrast. And I love the music every time they're in that little kid jail. The bell chimes, I think, is what it is. It said on my subtitles, bell chimes. I thought that was a really nice detail.
Yeah, no, the music is so great to be sad and scary, but still have that little bit of hopefulness in the chime sound. Yeah, great stuff. Now, I really agree with you, Jennifer. I think that in particular, that sort of idea of personal growth has this great contrast with what the character has been dealing with the last couple of episodes, which is being forced to go backwards. We talked a lot about how their, you know, Crosshair did not want to go back to Tantis, and he's facing that, and they're all kind of being forced to go backwards, and everybody in this episode is. Even Rampart is forced to, you know, wear the costume of who he once was and maybe still is. There's this Omega being re-imprisoned in the same place. There's that painful, beautiful moment of the armor being scrubbed clean, and that nice long shot of Hunter looking at his face, in basically, of his armor, with all of the marks of the experience that they've had since Order 66. All the way that armor has become more colorful, more unique, more individual, and it's all scrubbed away. And we hold on that shot as Hunter looks at his own face that's been scrubbed free. So there's this, like, for me, there's this sort of like contrast of like, I got to scrub all of this experience away so I can pretend to be what I was. I can pretend to be just a soldier obeying orders. So there's this kind of like sad, painful being pulled backward. But in contrast to that, it's like the being pulled backward is just the surface. And then the beautiful truth is what you were talking about, Jennifer, is all of this growth of, if Hunter is looking at that helmet going, is everything that we've experienced, everything that we've become, going to be erased? The answer is no, because it all lives in Omega. Mm-hmm. And her, I love seeing her growth. I love seeing that, she's trained as a soldier, but also by Sid and Fee and the School of Hard Knocks and Tough Scrapes. And there's that, she has a great vibe with the kids that's friendly, encouraging, inspiring, you know, lead a leadership retreat Omega. But it's also got a little bit of that, like, hey kids, nothing's ever easy, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, real life doesn't give you easy tests. Real life gives you hard tests, and you find a way, you know. Here, great, you know, I had training and I wasn't alone is beautiful, but also that real cocky, that's okay, I like a challenge. Like, that's like original Bad Batch stuff. And it's, you know, everything that she learned and everything she is because of everything she's been through with them is so apparent. So I really love that contrast between all the visuals of being pulled backwards versus seeing all of these characters going, no, we're not actually being pulled backwards. We're moving forward through all this personal growth. Jen, what are your thoughts on personal growth?
Yeah, no, I love it. I've shared this story before, but as a kid, when I would read a book, and I did this with the New Hope novelization, when I finished it, I'd look back at the other earlier pages and be like, wow, look how far we've come. Luke was on Tatooine not 40 pages ago. I just had this like wistful, like I couldn't let the book go. But you're like, we've gotten this far. And I really love what you're saying about that Hunter moment. And I thought those were just cool. You know, I want those figures, right? Like the rebatched batch or whatever. Would reclone batch, but I love that in contrast to Rampart being forced to put this on, and has that great line of like, "Oh, I've missed this." Like, what a way to look at like, "Oh, okay, I know who you are. You are not changed. You are not learning the lessons." This episode has these lessons of, you know, the Empire tosses aside pieces and people and makes you specimens and all those things. And he's kind of like, "Yeah, great. I love that. This is what I miss." Versus them kind of going, "The journey has taken us this far, and we are beyond what our armor is. We're beyond the pain, the trials, and the lessons. We're all of it, and we're going to move forward to get Omega." I love that. It's a good scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I also thought that there was, you know, you could see the growth from Hunter and Crosshair in particular of they've both at times pumped the brakes of like, we're here for Omega, but let's just keep like, especially second season, Hunter really kind of came to that conclusion of, let's just keep our little family safe. Let's just retire and live on Pabu until everything went off. It's been Omega pushing them of like, no, all clones free or no clones free. And Hunter says really specifically, like, it's the only chance we have of finding Omega and freeing those clone prisoners. It's not just finding Omega to him. It's also fulfilling the vision that Omega has given him. Crosshair, even though he's always been a member of a squad, has often been a loner. You know, he's coded as the loner with the toothpick who hides up in the hills, right, with his sniper. And he's got a bunch of lines about togetherness. He says to Echo, you can't go alone. He's got a real, he's so proud of Echo. He says, relax, Echo's on it. I thought there was like real, just sort of like, those are a lot of real positive team building statements from Crosshair. So I saw growth in all of them as well as Omega.
Yeah, indeed.
Ken, what were some of the ways that the episode hit you?
You kind of actually just segued perfectly there. I put this idea of teamwork, togetherness, and trust. And I had a lot of old school original trilogy thoughts of, I just remember and pictured one of our favorite lines, but Palpatine flipping back on Luke and saying, your faith in your friends is yours, and how he views that as a weakness, and how that is infused all the way through the Empire, but also how that's a fear that he has, that the faith you have in your friends might bring me down. I can't have that. And this is truly an episode of teamwork and the togetherness and two versions of it. And you have the Omega Hope version. We're going to do this. You have the Rampart kind of like, how can you possibly think this is going to work? And I don't have any trust. And he, and building up to that end moment, the end beat, it was vibes of Han coming through for Lando in Return of the Jedi. We got to give him more time. Like, that's, I know my buddy will do it. I have full faith. We talk about the lessons of trust in all of these episodes, and it's always going to be there. But this was trust in action. There was no debate, to your point, of Hunter. There's no retiring on Pabu at this moment. Crosshair, the toothpick's out. Wrecker's Wrecker. But just, no, this is going to happen. This is going to happen. It's tense, but it's going to happen. I really love that. It really stuck out to me of the contrast of the Empire versus what connection can do and what it actually is when you put into play.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. Jennifer, how did you feel about the ideas of trust or teamwork or that faith in Echo that they really seem to display at the end of the episode?
I was shocked. That was a moment where I really, throughout this whole episode, I found myself really tensing up and wondering what is going to happen. This is an animated show. And yet I'm like, anybody could die. You know, one of the kids could say, hey, she's actually trying to get out. You know, they could turn on Omega. Like anything can happen. And I haven't felt this in a while in Star Wars, where it really is unexpected, where I did not know if the plan was going to work. Yes, they can trust Echo, but maybe it may not work out. And so when the plan did come together in the end, I went, and then the episode ended. And I went, that's it. Okay. All right. Okay, good.
At the last moment, just barely clinging to it. Yeah, that's great. I think that tension of anything can happen has been really, really earned. You know, I think they're... There have been shows in the last couple of decades that had discovered sort of the shock of a character death, like 24 or Walking Dead. And then it just kind of became like, it's been 10 minutes since somebody died. They got to die. Yeah. This show has done such a good job of tech being lost. And then just a sense of sort of dread and a sense of how hard this battle is and how many things could go wrong that it I hadn't even considered one of the kids going, I got a side deal with Dr. Skulder and I'm going to get two candy pops for turning Omega in. Like,
That's real life. I'm telling you, it's more likely that one of the kids would turn than actually.
Jax, you know,
yes, that's what I was thinking.
Jax wants out, but Jax might want out too much. You know what I mean?
Jax is the weak link. She's got too much fear, doesn't she? Or no, he right? Yeah. Who's the one whose name? Sammy, I think, is the one whose name we got this week, right? The real quiet one. Yeah, Sammy. The Ben Torrin, I believe. I really loved how much this was about, Ken, as you're saying, trust in action and even in the tension, almost testing the audience's trust in the Bad Batch of like, we believe in you. But the odds are really long. So are you going to make it? I thought it was this. I really liked that it was the two missions. And, you know, it was sort of the Bad Batch in whole leading Rampart. But Rampart was the one of like, is he going to come along? Can we trust him? Is this all going to fall apart? The voice of doubt about the long odds. You know, Rampart is the voice of doubt. And then Omega, it's different, but it's the same thing of she's leading this little team in doing team building exercises, pep talks, connections. And they're not cynical or cruel like Rampart, but they are also exactly like Rampart voicing the like, but you can't do that. It's impossible. The odds are so long. And Hunter and the rest of the Bad Batch keep talking to Rampart about trust of like, you know, Echo says, you really think we can trust that Hydro Snake? And like, hey, remember the Empire imprisoned you and we got you out and we will fulfill our bargain. We will give you freedom when this is done. And even Crosshair, Cynical Crosshair has that line about like, well, we have to trust you and you have to trust us. We don't have. Mm-hmm. So there's all this sort of trying to, you know, just say like, we're in horrific odds, but we have to trust each other because it's the only way to possibly get through it. So everything, like you're saying, Ken, with our heroes in both these missions is you know, trust and teamwork. I thought there was this really interesting contrast. It's standard imperial behavior that Palpatine wants, but both Rampart and Emery demonstrate the opposite of trust and teamwork, which is just rigid power structure where the only thing that matters is station and who's the boss. Rampart's got the great comedy moments about, I can't wear this. It's captain's uniform.
Yeah.
And, you know, after barking orders and making people believe that, you know, they are under him, I've missed this. Everything to him is, I function not by trust and teamwork. I function by brutal power and station. And even then, Emery and kind of her doubt and her back and forth with Scalder, they're clearly vying for permission. And Emery kind of barks, I'm the chief scientist. I'll run the vault as I see fit.
Yeah.
So it's, this episode is almost like this, like there are two ways for groups to function. Trust and teamwork and maybe a leadership role, but, you know, but everybody gets a voice. And then just this sort of like top down brutal station is all that matters. And I really liked that there was that. The trust in the teamwork was made even more sort of lovely and hopeful and fist pumping by seeing that the rigidity and the just crabbiness of the station and power is all that matters. Kenny, do you have any thoughts on the bad guy's perspective on this?
Yeah, it's definitely this is a weekend team building office retreat that we're all taking here and learning what can work, because I've got to have faith in the idea that the team power structure is going to lose, right? Emery is going to, I have faith that she's going to buck that system, even though she's utilizing the power right now. It's the system she knows. I don't fully trust Rampart. I don't think we're having a, you know, come to Bendu moment, if you will, of where he's going to learn more about his true heart and soul being warm and squishy. I think he might die. Like, he's going to be stuck in this system. And then just to see it on display, this series going back to even episode one of season one has just been this. Here's the oppression of the empire that is always talked about. Here's how it rolled out, and here's how it affected people down to this micro level of office politics. So, I absolutely loved it. I put the empire and the fear of connection. It's like that letting them mingle is unwise should be on a pamphlet that Palpatine sets up. No mingling.
Right. I don't think Rampart ever said to anybody who worked under him, I'm doing it again and I'm taking all of you with me. I don't think that's a motivational phrase that he would use. Yeah, he's fascinating because you would think that that's a character who could have a break, right? Of I was doing great in the Empire. I was killing it and doing exactly what Palpatine wanted and accomplishing all the goals. And then he needed somebody to hang out to dry. So it was me. But he doesn't seem to have any break with the Imperial system. He seems to love the Imperial system. And if he got a chance, we'd go right back to it. Jennifer, how do you feel about Rampart as a villain? Do you enjoy him? Does he set you on edge? What do you feel?
A classic narcissist. And so he believes that he's so vain. He's so like power hungry, and he believes that he is special. Right. Mm-hmm. And that he deserves to be there. And people do need to listen to him because he has a presence and a power. Right. He thrives in that. And that's why I think the Empire is probably full of narcissists who just, you know, they all just fight amongst each other. And the greatest currency with the rebellion is trust and loyalty. And we see it over and over again with the Bad Batch. And that is the way that they've been able to not only make friends, but turn enemies to their side is their trust and their loyalty. And it's a wonderful lesson, I think, for all of us. I certainly want to remember that.
It's hard. It is not easy.
No.
Yeah, you're making a great point there, Jed, of the currency of the rebellion is trust. Sign me up. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And we've talked so much about over the years how the rebellion is, I don't even want to say coded, just what it is. It's this diverse collection of minds and experiences and perspectives and journeys. And once you get there, you're there. You know, I'm even thinking of, in the video game, it happens fast because there were some business reasons they cut the story a little shorter. But, you know, Iden Versio shows up. You know what? Lando's like, she's switching sides. That's good enough for me. I'm going to trust you, and your actions are going to prove me wrong or prove me right. But I think they're going to prove me right. And she does. So I love that kind of stuff. A great point about the rebellion and the core of it.
Yeah. No, and I'd love to see the way Crosshair is handling Rampart, because I think he understands him so much in a great switch on the way kind of Rampart tried to make Crosshair feel less than and still under his thumb. Yeah. And there's so much great stuff in here about the way they are just pushing Rampart around. You're just going, well, too bad, A-hole. The plan changed. That's it. All building up to that moment of he's just full of fear and full of rigidity and full of it can't be done. That moment at the end where he shouts, abort the mission. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the big fist pumping moments for you when Hunter went negative. Because it was such a great, like, you know, one of the theme statements of the Bad Batch as this cool, you know, A-team-esque, we go our own way, is like, when have we ever followed orders? You know, Tech's great line. Yeah. And it felt like a different way into that of like, you're all rigidity. You're all follow my orders. You're all, it can't be done. Yeah. And Hunter's like, negative. Rampart, we're not taking your orders. We're doing the impossible.
Yeah. The bringing back of Rampart is a wonderful, pleasant surprise. And just it, like you said, he's frustrating. He's confusing. He's also, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe he has a big sea change, but he's that guy who's like, your boss, Palpatine, used you as a fall guy, probably would have killed you. His followers probably would have strung you up if they had a chance. And you're still going, but I'll still vote for him. What? Do you not see what happened? And I don't know which way he's going to go. And I think he's going to choose that direction. I think he's going to pay the price.
Yeah. I am surprised to be this invested in Rampart's choice, but I really am. It's going to be. Yeah. Yeah, very meaningful. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of the other ideas I wanted to talk about is just a little bit of, I think it's in the title itself of, you know, Into the Breach, you know, it made me think mm-hmm. of the Shakespeare quote from Henry V of Once More, Onto the Breach, Dear Friends. Mm-hmm. In that speech, it's Henry urging his troops to enter the small breach they have made in a defensive wall and take control. And that idea of the breach being like, we only have this tiny, tiny little opportunity made me appreciate something that I think the show's been doing in general, but the episode in particular has been, I think, ramping up the efficiency and the horror of the Empire. Mm-hmm. Over the years, starting with like the Gen X original trilogy perspective where, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi says only Imperial stormtroopers are this precise. And then we all spend decades making fun of the fact that they can't hit the broadside mm-hmm. of a moisture farm. Mm-hmm. And the stormtroopers are kind of can come off as dopes. I think because the first season of Rebels wanted to be kid friendly, the Empire is scary, but also Ezra's kind of this little tyke who can kind of mm-hmm. fool them and trip them and put buckets on their heads and, you know, not their helmets, but like he can kind of Three Stooges them, you know, and they come off kind of, and then other places like, you know, Jedi Fallen Order and Rebels kind of elevate Vader to this like, well, he's unstoppable. So mm-hmm. all you can do is escape him. And mm-hmm. I feel like in the Bad Batch, they've taken that sort of Vader mentality and applied it to the actual Empire, where any contact with the Empire is truly terrifying. Mm-hmm. And it's so rigid. There are eyes on you everywhere. And mm-hmm. the only hope you have is this tiny breach, this tiny possibility, metaphorical and sometimes literally physically, like in this episode with, you know, Omega finds the tiny shaft, you know, they have tiny windows of time, tiny type frames, time frames. I really enjoyed that idea of the Empire is super frightening and the only chance our heroes are going to get is a tiny breach. Ken, what are your thoughts on how they're putting across the Empire and that idea?
Yeah, and then going back to the Rebels thing, yeah, I love Rebels, but season one has a little bit of the zoinks, we got them type of mm-hmm. vibe, and I totally get why, and I think the show mm-hmm. matures with its audience, and I really, that's going back to even what I said about it, from season one, episode one, the Bad Batch has turned a lot of things. I said this with the thing with about the clones too, of like, it's taken a trivia answer, or it's taken a, oh yeah, that was the time period in which the Republic became the Empire, and it's gone, let's show you what that actually means. Let's go to the level. And I think Andor is right there showing it on a granular level as well. I really, It's fresh in my mind because I was just on our pal Jeff May's podcast yesterday. We were discussing his love of Andor, which I support, versus also like, hey, I think Bad Batch is right there in a lot of ways on what it's doing. And I think it's that kind of stuff you're talking about. The clones are replaced. Neat little line on Wikipedia. Here's a story of the emotions of that. Here's the problems of that. Here's the identity issues with that. Here's the oppression of that. And yeah, there, I love that it's a thread. It's high tension. It's a fun episode of television of are they going to pull this off? But it was overwhelming. It was daunting. And you got to hold onto your slivers of hope. And Jen, I think you kind of brought this up earlier with Omega, just her kind of choosing hope, not naively. That's the only option. And she has one way forward. She believes full heartedly that we're going to find that little sliver in this entire machine. And she does.
Yeah. But it isn't naive, because it is like, I'm aware it's only a tiny sliver, but it's got to be there and we got to look for it. Jennifer, mm-hmm. how do you feel about the way Bad Batch is kind of putting across the Empire is a really horrific threat that makes it impossible to move?
I'd say that this show is the closest to Andor that we've seen. It's the animated version of Andor. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of the themes, because what Andor did so well, which I think is why it did so well, is that it took the ideas of the Empire and it showed it in a very realistic way. It's not just these, you know, these men in capes or women or people in capes trying to use their force lightning. It is the systems that are in place that are oppressing people. It is the people in those systems, in these positions of power, or trying to get to a position of power, right? Like the people doing the paperwork, they all are trying to like fall in line or trying to get ahead, trying to prove themselves. And so that is basically what we're seeing here with the Bad Batch, is that it is all these different types of villains, which feel much more real world, which feel much more scary, in my opinion. Because if you just have a bunch of people in capes doing force lightning or whatnot, or force jokes, it's like, okay, that's Star Wars. But this is like, oh, this is like more real world stuff that we're seeing. That's terrifying.
Yeah, no, I mean, I mean, it's one of the things I love about Star Wars, the way the kind of high pulp that you're describing can be connected to the very scary real world, you know, that it all flows from cackling, rotten teeth, Danger Fingers Palpatine perspective. That not only do I want to control people, this isn't just like a government with a lot of rules. It's a government that wants to grind people down, that wants to make people feel awful, because it perpetuates the dark side for every single individual child he makes miserable with this horrific, for every, you know, sad broken marriage between two broken down Imperials, Palpatine feels more power, because that's to me the great myth of Star Wars, that this is the dark side of making people, just killing all light in your soul. And even just this episode, to see the number of people who are just, even the people inside the system are in fear of the system, so that Rampart can just like raise the threat of like, I'll tell your boss. And, you know, he's got, you know, them doing the Porky Pig, as they say, of, you know, stuttering and falling all over themselves because of their fear of the system and how cruel it is.
I love your, I don't know if you watch What We Do in the Shadows, but you're kind of making Palpatine into this ultimate example of the energy vampire Colin Robinson, who's fed off of. Are you good? Do you have a problem with your form? Having problems at home with the relationship? The dark side's grown stronger.
Yeah, I know. I have watched it. That's very funny. It's so funny to imagine like Palpatine sitting in the, you know, what once was the Jedi Temple with his Sith acolytes and dignitaries and all that, and he just goes, someone else just gave up on life.
Someone took a day job they hate.
That's hilarious.
I become more powerful. This person isn't going to try to write poetry. Now I am more powerful. Any other big picture themes or thoughts from you, Jennifer?
No, that's about it. Awesome. That I can think of.
Ken?
No, we got it. One little line that just kind of sums it all up here is one of the kids asking Omega, what did you find? And she says, our way out. And yes, I did think of one way out in Andor. I think it's a spiritual sibling to that series of episodes. But I love that kind of wrapping up the themes for me. Our way out.
Yep. A little bit of a breach that the kids can take. I'm excited. there is also a little bit of comedy to me of like, is she going to escape and be flying away as they fly in? two approaches at it. Anyway, very, very fun and exciting and interesting stuff. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be talking about some of the fun details, some of the canon, some of the fun fist-pumping moments in this episode. Back in a moment.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back to continue our discussion of Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 13, Into the Breach. We always like to talk about canon, lore, connections to other stories. As you were both pointing out, I think part of what's really enjoyable about Bad Batch is it's not these huge, look who showed up. I mean, sometimes the Asajj Ventress and all that. But like, there are some really interesting things in this episode. I want to start here. I think there's a couple of specifics I want to talk about. But in general, felt this episode was really starting to look like the original trilogy era. You know, there was that control room that is, you know, straight out of A New Hope. The Imperial outfits. There were some bits of lighting in the station that just looked like they were emulating the 70s lighting of A New Hope. Ken, did you get this vibe that the world of Bad Batch is starting to look more and more like the original trilogy?
Absolutely. So much so, for those watching, I wore my old Empire Death Star wall design shirt. I haven't worn it in a while. Because it just kind of had that vibe. And it's also in a weird, fun way. Or you're talking about canon connections. But I think you're right. You know, we're in this era where, you know, some of the clones are still around. Some of the old gear, you know, juggernauts and troop transports and stuff that we're familiar from the Clone Wars. And that goes. And that goes away. And I take it as a sign of you know, Palpatine's plan fully taking effect. And so I love seeing it in a way of like, oh, that's horrendous. But I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Jennifer, do you feel like it's starting to look more like the original trilogy?
I did not. Maybe on a subconscious level, I actually felt, especially with the kid jail, that it's felt very THX 1138. And with Andor, obviously, it felt reminiscent of that, which made me feel like, oh, this is classic Star Wars. This felt very much like a George Lucas touch, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah, no, I agree with you about Tantiss in that room. Very much looks very sterile and very THX 1138. There's a lot of great establishing shots from where they kind of matched the angle of Tantiss itself to the angle they were coming in to shoot the room on in an establishing shot. And I think it Mount Tantiss has always been cool and looked cool. There's an interesting thing in this episode where it's often been twilight or stormy on Mount Tantiss, and it was dawn on Tantiss, which has a lot of Omega's waking up on her first day. But it also had that, like, look, when Omega's back on Tantiss, even the sun comes out. Mm-hmm. And because they had all these establishing shots that Tantiss matched the angle of the establishing shot of the room, it made me think more than I have about that great classic Star Wars, the rigid and mechanical versus the organic, and this beautiful tree-covered mountain, which has been poisoned by this horrible, rigid, sterile facility. So I really enjoyed that as well. I think that's a great aesthetic and contrast to the original trilogy stuff. Ken,
here comes the sun, right?
Yeah. How long? I don't think we have an answer, and I don't know if we'll ever get an answer. I sometimes don't like talking about how long has it been since X, because I think it invites getting pedantic about the answer. I care more about the spirit of it. So I'm asking this in the spirit. How long do you think it is into the reign of the Empire? How long since Order 66?
I've still taken it as almost a year by year kind of thing. Like, we could be three and a half years in. It's the way I've kind of taken it. And a lot of that has to do with the gear as well. I imagine by now, you know, we're Palpatine's. It's funny. We've always made that Force Center joke of, you know, the last day of Revenge of the Sith is Palpatine going, all right, I want gray uniforms. I want white uniforms. Like, and you know, that takes some time, some of it. So I that's where I go. I go, and you're right. I don't spend a lot of time thinking of it. But eventually, I think once the series is done, I want to know its place. I want the book to explain on the timeline where it is. Clayton Sandell can write a new book.
Yeah. Jennifer, how long do you, in your gut, feel like it's been since Order 66? Do you feel like it's been a while?
No, I think it's been about a few years. I agree. It still feels kind of fresh, but I'm so bad with timelines that sometimes I actually have to remind myself, wait, when is this taking place? I need a big mural on my wall. But the only problem is I'd have to constantly be changing it based on new things that are released.
Yes, the things chicken scratched in. Yeah, it feels to me like... we so loved when we were discussing the first season about kind of the shock and awe of how quickly things were changing and for all the different people. But now it feels like, okay, there's really, you know, like in Andor, this great Andor wants to go somewhere warm and easy. And like, there is nowhere warm and easy, you know? And it feels like it's been enough years that, yeah, the Imperial machinery is really locking everything down. And I think that's maybe a part of what I was responding to and seeing some of those familiar aesthetics from the original trilogy. There's also that shot of that Bespin-like mining facility, which literally made me ooh and ah because it was beautiful. It had the vibe of is that a concept art version of Bespin that I've never seen? I don't know if it is or not. But Ken, I wanted to ask you, how do you feel about seeing imagery like that? That's like, that's not Bespin. That's not going back to something we know, but it's so similar and reminds you that Bespin is a mining facility, and there are many other like it. Maybe this is on the other side.
No, I love it. This galaxy is so big you want more planets like this. And I fall for it, too. And I think we've all had those moments where we watch a trailer for, you know, Mandalorian season two. We're like, Ilum? That's got to be Ilum. And then it might be. And it would be awesome if it was, if they found a way to work. But I don't say it cynically or trying to, you know, shake a finger at anyone who spends time wondering about this, but things. But it's like, no, there's so many planets, something to discover. You know, if it had been Bespin and, Lobot comes out to say hello, you know, it would have been cool, but it's not needed. And I love that the galaxy is bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Jennifer, did that evoke Bespin feelings for you? And if so, how did you feel about it?
100%. I guess that was an original trilogy moment for me. I was like, this is not Bespin. But then I go to, should I know this planet? How come I don't know where this is? It's just bad.
Yeah, no, I understand. I tried to run with the beauty and go, well, it was a really powerful image to me because I so love the imagery of Empire Strikes Back, and it's so deep, and the shots of Bespin, you know, used to get me in trouble with my parents when anytime there was a beautiful sunset, I'd be like, it's like Bespin. And my mom would be like, it's not real. So
stop the love goes deep.
there was some concern there. I also want to talk about the droid sucker. I looked it up on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. That there is no formal name according to Wikipedia. It's a magnet suction tube for droids and cool rogue clones. Ken, did you enjoy seeing something so old? It's from the original Star Wars story. And I'm sure it's been used this somewhere in a book or a video game or some beat I'm forgetting in another show. Yeah, but totally. It felt to me like an example of one of the oldest possible things in Star Wars and seeing it kind of in a different light.
I'm going to read exactly what I wrote in my notes because we think alike. I said, loved Echo using one of the oldest things in Star Wars, droid tubes. And I totally understand that if you're not an original trilogy or hadn't been in the theater in 77 or watched it on VHS in 80, it's not one of the oldest things you've seen. Totally get it. But is, you know, in a lot of ways, one of the first things that we became obsessed with. Like, what was that? Because I always thought, you know, back in our day, we used to go to the drive-in ATMs and that pneumatic tube would be sent to your mom or dad and they'd write a check and they'd send it back. I always thought it was that. It's like, is that where the droid, can I take my R2 figure and send it in there? No. So it was fun. It was great. It invokes kind of what you've been talking about, the original trilogy vibe that we're heading towards. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was one of the things that kind of gave me those vibes. Jennifer, how did you feel about seeing the droid tube in action in this episode?
I loved it. And yeah, I guess that, yeah, okay. So there were a lot of original trilogy things that I subconsciously took in. Yeah, yeah. But I just loved the noise of the mouse droid. It just was so cute.
I think the subtitle said droid screaming.
Yeah, it was like a squeal, but also a sound of fear.
And that was one of the other imagery, like to go along with Omega's, you know, tiny shaft leading upward to tiny breach of Echo's looking at how am I possibly going to get on here? A clever tiny breach. I can get sucked up like a droid.
Yeah.
Here's my last canon thing. There's a small thing, but I wanted to throw it in because I really wanted to get Jennifer's thoughts in particular. Rampart says to the clones, you're the ones who are going to stand out like overheated Gamorreans. Always nice to have Gamorreans get a shout out, but it felt to me like it was a little tongue-in-cheek in-universe reference to Gamorreans, but also to the extremely hot filming conditions of Return of the Jedi that all Gamorreans were overheated as they filmed. How did you feel about that?
I loved that. And I actually sat there for a moment trying to imagine like the overheated Gamorreans. And who was he directing that to? He looked in Wrecker's direction. And I was like, what is he trying to say? We also know from the Mandalorian, they can be very fit and have no problem being overheated.
And taller. Yeah.
And taller.
Yeah. Extremely judgmental on Rampart's part.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that one, Ken?
I like your take on it being a little meta, too, of just, yeah, picturing, granny documentary footage from 1983 with a Gamorrean mouth propped open and
a fan.
Yeah, blowing in. So I love that. Yeah, I had that thought, too. I went to the two from Rest in Peace, the two from Book of Boba Fett, of just like, well, maybe they were overheated, and that's why I decided eventually, nuts to that. We're taking our shirts off. We're going in.
Keep your shirt on. Yeah. That was it. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Wrecker playing on his data pad. Such an amazing shot. And we can talk about it again with comedy of, you know, Wrecker being asked to stay on the ship, leaning back. It looked like his thumb was moving. His foot was kicking. It was such a modern image of, you know,
yes,
I'm waiting to pick my brother up because I gave him a ride to the dentist, kind of like just chilling with my smartphone. Ken, what did you make of that? Did it grab you?
No, I loved it. I loved that you said that it's very modern. It's a modern kind of thing. I also love because, you know, Crosshair has become my number one, but Wrecker's still my guy. And I just love that they're like, guard the ship. And he's like, got it. Feet up. I'm going to check some baseball scores and just kind of sit here. You know, my old director security days, I'd come up on him and be like, what are you doing? That's not, you can't do that. But now I'm like, that's what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Jennifer, how did you feel about whatever Wrecker was doing on his data pad?
That was a fun moment. I actually was drawn more to the one where Hunter was waiting for Echo to show up, and we didn't know that, right? But he was looking at it like he was waiting for his Uber or something.
Like, you're right. There are two moments. Yeah,
and he's kind of like half-heartedly listening to Rampart and just like checking his data pads. Ah, my Uber showed up. Echo.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is a character bias for me where I just assume that Hunter's doing something vital and important. And I assume that Wrecker's like playing whatever the Star Wars version of Fruit Ninja is, you know, like
playing Best Fiends, getting up there.
Yeah.
I'm level 145.
So hopefully, you know, StarWars.com puts out their little like, you know, episode information thing, maybe. Whatever video game Wrecker's playing will be on that. All right. Well, let's talk about favorite moments. Ken, did you have any favorite moments of action, comedy, whimsy, heartbreaking drama, anything?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I know we talk about them all in terms of moments, but I was like, oh, I didn't write down any action moments. And there's some good punches and ships flying and doors opening. And I put the Echo going up the tube as one of the action moments, but just sort of the overall moments. A lot of great comedy this episode, a lot of personality spice in here. Deal, you mentioned earlier, but do we think we can really trust that Hydro Snake? Is I'm going to put that up there as a scruffy looking nerf herder type of Star Wars insult, along with the hated Gamorreans. I just don't want to insult Gamorreans. Loved all that moment. And there's a great couple of Wrecker moments you all might mention too, but I love Rampart. Do you think I'm lying? And Wrecker's like, yes.
That must've been such a fun D. Bradley Baker moment. Cause they all answer and in their different ways. Like, yes. Yeah. Yes. Record all those responses. That's so great. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, what are some moments for you that you particularly enjoyed?
I really loved all the Omega scenes and just the tension that was building when Dr. Scalder was coming to check on her. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? It just really was a fun moment. It felt very much like a heist movie, right? Or a Prison Break movie. There were some other things, but I think I'll save it. Yeah.
Okay. I really like that Scalder action beat because there's a part of me that was wondering if Omega was going to have, you know, rallied the troops and have them do some distraction.
Right.
And I kind of like that she didn't. Maybe that's next week's lesson or tomorrow's lesson. The first lesson is difficult things are possible. Watch me do it, kids. And that gave me more tension when Scalder walked in and the kids didn't drop anything or make any sort of distraction for her and like, oh no, Omega's just showing them how it's done. All right. Yeah. That's great. I loved the, do you think I'm lying in the chorus? Mm-hmm. Yep. Up there, I think in the pantheon of great lines in Bad Batch, the I can't wear this and then tapping it. It's a captain's uniform. Just such a great character beat to make me love to hate Rampart. It's easy to create Imperials that you just despise and you want them to go. But to love to hate Rampart is really fun. And this idea of like, I am so clearly a vice admiral in my genes. Mm-hmm. I can't pull off being a captain. It was hilarious. Love that. Also up there with the Rampart, finishing that conversation, when they say, well, you've been demoted, and I hate clones.
Yeah.
Really great. Really great. Because, I mean, last week when they bust him out, he tried to keep the high card, referring to Crosshair as a number and making them feel less than. And, like, they're breaking him down. They're in command, and he's not. And all he has left to do is grumble about how much he hates them.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. Ken, other moments for you?
Yeah, he had a great line of, it almost made me like him a little bit, of just, I beg your pardon, I didn't just make it to Vice Admiral on looks alone. he's got enough of his personality still going there. And the beard is, I mentioned last week, because I think it's the same guy, but I'm like, two beards in Imperial office uniforms, it's just, the standards are falling around this place. I don't know what's going on. And I have the beard, but you don't put in a formal dress a uniform on with the beards. What's going on here, Empire?
It must be a clampdown. I think canon-wise, I think Palpatine must at some point think, like, they're enjoying these beards. I need to take it from them. And it's a new edict, like, you know, 9 years into the Empire. No beards.
I love this. We need Alex and Molly to get this Star Wars explained beard version done, and maybe we can help them write it, because I love what you just put out there. Because so I'm a, you know, not only have a beard, I'm a New York Yankee fan in baseball, and New York Yankees still to this day have one of the most archaic no facial hair rulings. You cannot have any facial other than a mustache. And it comes like from George Steinbrenner, the late, at times great, most times not great, George Steinbrenner, who's like, wait, we can't do that. You gotta have a, you know, as the old Simpsons joke, Johnny Unitas has a haircut you can set your watch to. Like, no. And it is such a taking away of personality that a lot of players, you can't fight it. You sign a contract, you shave your face. But versus, you know, so I can totally see Palpatine like about 3-4 years in going, what is going on here? That guy's got a handlebar mustache. This guy's got no, one look.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I love
Are they
that.
Expressing themselves with Jen? You know, there's the real world truth of, you know, that's how, you know, extras you could find on the street looked in the 70s. But I like how they've rolled that into like, beards were all the fashion on Alderaan, and weird different facial hair and sideburns. And if it really was like an imperial edict of, you know, the Operation Clean Face, and everybody on Alderaan's like, screw you. Here's some mutton chops.
Yep.
I love it. Jennifer, any other moments or things that you wanted to share there?
You know, it makes me think about the beard watch thing. I'm sure that they had meetings about this at Lucasfilm, deciding whether or not to have characters with beards, right? I just think that they're so fascinating, because it is such a conscious thing. Anytime I do commercial auditions and I'm auditioning with a male actor, they're like, are you willing to shave? So it's a very deliberate choice. I would love to know the thought process behind that. Something that I thought was really interesting was Emery. And when Omega asks her, where do the kids come from, or something like that? And she says that she doesn't know where the kids come from, but they're safe here. That made me think, does she really not know? Has she never asked? Or does she know, but she's trying to not remember that, or think about that, or dwell upon that? I thought that was such an interesting detail that I made me wonder about for the character. Yeah.
I mean, it feels to me like it has to be some level of semantic game in her mind, because last episode she saw the entire process, right? We hire A1, level A, whatever, level one, top tier bounty hunter.
An A1 sauce bounty hunter.
And then you go and you pick up. So, like, fair enough. She's like, I don't know exactly what Cad Bane did to acquire this child, but it's like, how much of a mystery is it, you know?
Right.
So is what she's saying, like, I don't know what planet they got that baby from. They're like,
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's almost more like she doesn't want to admit. Right. Ken, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I certainly wouldn't expect her to be like, wow, we go around, like you said, hiring bounty hunters, stealing babies. You know, Palpatine also did this in the Clone Wars. We decided it was a great plan. Yeah. I wouldn't expect that. I get that. But there's just something so intriguing with Emery. And I love, this goes to what we're saying in the overall thing of just, there isn't, lore dump. There isn't a bunch of answers yet. We might get it. We might not get some of these answers. It's just the character. But like there was enough of Emery of doubt or wonder I'm having about where she'll end up and what's going through her head right now, that this moment, Jen, I'm glad you brought it up, of like, how much is she denying it? How much does she know and not want to share it? Again, I know that the details wouldn't be shared with Omega at that point. But also, when Omega steals the little, you know, little scalpel or whatever, I had this motive of like, does Emery know? Does Emery know? And you know, they don't. There's again, not a wink. There's nothing. But Omega has this look of just like she's staring right at her, like, and it's a tension filled moment. I get it, but like, you know, and I don't want to get lost in that, and I almost don't even care to the in terms of plot if she knows, but I'm so pulled in by the character that I'm like, how much is she aware? How much is she changing? How much is she fighting what's going on inside? And it's pretty close range. Maybe she sees it and I'm going to let it happen. I don't know. It's just fun to wonder about the character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to that point, the fact that she does let the specimens mingle and whatnot, she knows that by putting Omega there, that Omega is going to come up with a plan. She has to know to some extent,
at least
right?
to the spirit of the moment, whether or no she knows the actual thing got pulled and hidden in her sleeve, fair enough. That, but like to your point, the spirit of it, she gave the doll to Ava. Like you're already violating rules,
right? Yeah. Exactly. Or is it just that she wants to like give her as much like of a leash? You know what I mean? Like and give her more treat her more humanely.
Yeah,
that's possible. But I'm sure that she knows that she's setting this up, something up for Omega to plan.
I can follow that a bit.
I got the vibe, and future episodes may prove me wrong, that Emery's almost in this place of lying to herself. That within this rigid system, she can run the science, the lab. You know, she's the chief scientist, and she's running it the way she sees the vault, the way she sees fit. And it's almost like she's trying to like hold off the rigidity of the empire and the cruelty, and saying I can make this little pocket where I treat people better. I can't change the system, but I can treat you all better here. And it's almost like Omega's like, Emery, you're lying to yourself. Like, the system won't let you treat us with that bit of kindness. I think Omega almost sees like I love Omega's line of like, I want to trust you that you're taking good care of them. But it's kind of not your decision. If you treat us too kindly, eventually the system's going to smash you. Like, hey, Dr. Skulder coming down here. And I wonder if that will be this sort of like moment of truth where Emery has to look in the mirror and be like, I'm lying to myself that I can treat them well because the system won't allow it.
I'm really on board with that. All this discussion about her, she's been handled so well because I believe I take her or at least the situation on face value. I don't have the exact moment in my memory of the last couple episodes, but when she, you know, asks for the promotion and gets it and is kind of for the first time sees this, it seemed like some general shock to me from her, the character, because, you know, you're in the system, you're in your lane. You don't want to mingle. Palpatine doesn't want the kids to mingle. Doesn't want you to mingle. No after work drinks, like you stay in your lane. And so without that mingling, without that connection, without seeing the bigger picture, I think there's some sincerity in her shock of, oh, this is what's going on. These are children. This is what you're doing. No, they're specimens. So I'm with you. I think there's some absolute lie, which is why I've said, I don't even know if it's a plot mechanic. I don't care if it is. I almost don't want it to be that she knew that Omega took that. I'm just saying there's this energy of going on of like, almost like Omega going, like you're saying, Jen, you have to know I'm going to try, right?
right.
Like I want to trust you on a lot of things, and you're right, Joseph. No matter what you feel, look at the machinery you're in, and that could be the mere moment, like you're talking about.
Emery really should know that Omega's going to try, but is she lying to herself so much to go like, but if I treat her nice and I,
yes,
but Omega's going to see that I gave Ava the doll and she'll fall in line, and I don't think I'm not looking at Emery as like some big like a MacGuffin mystery with like an answer of or anything like that. But I also feel like she is one of the big dangling questions of this show.
Because
we spent more time with her now, but it's like, it's kind of a big deal that it's not just Omega, that Omega has a sister, and what exactly to happen to Emery and what exactly she will choose. I'm curious to see how much of a fulcrum, not the name in Star Wars, but how much of an actual like hinge of how everything wraps up Emery is, like, you know, is she going to be the one who pushes the button or doesn't and saves the day or doesn't kind of character?
Love it.
Yeah.
Glad you mentioned
In terms of other just little moments, I really loved Omega's whole speech, but the great delivery on the want to know a secret and the little bit of the music swelling. That was that, like, this is the fist pumping speech. This is Henry V, except for real quiet while being watched, you know. It's so great. So great.
Oh, I love the use of the little board game to here's what we're looking at. That was great.
Rampart's wonderful. We're all going to die. Was great. Great comedy and great cowardice. Final beat for me is I really liked the tension of everything going on with Echo, but in particular, his cool, you know, trained as an ARC trooper back in the day, action role hide himself, you know. And I like that it was, you know, a clone who might catch him. He's like, I can probably get by these dumb TK troopers, but clones watching. Any other moments that either of you wanted to discuss?
I would be remiss if my love of record didn't let me highlight the where's your captain? Captaining.
It was very good.
Great. Love it. Love your record.
It was very good. We're getting some just good quality clone time here in these last few episodes. Ken, was there anything that you disliked or questioned?
No, I know. Yeah. One of these days I'll just absolutely rip something apart. Right. No, I loved it. I think it's always, anytime I question something and I feel like even Jen, you saying like, hey, it ends and what? And I had that like excitement to go forward. I mentioned, you know, the rancor I saw online a little bit about episode lengths. I love what they're doing and I just, enjoying even when I'm like, I do want to know some of the Emery stuff or what's going to happen and da da da. You know, I'm sure by now we can, Boba Fett probably not showing up. Like a lot of things there. I trust what's going on. Questions can turn into just fun if you just lay back and let it roll out in front of you.
Yeah. No. My only thing was just kind of resetting my own expectations for kind of the tone and the ramp up to the big finale. But there was nothing in this episode I disliked. I really enjoyed it. Jennifer, is there anything that you were challenged by in this episode?
Yes, there was one thing, but I'll start with a positive. I liked that Omega did not rely on Emery for any sort of help. She did steal that tool, and she kind of did chat with her, but she didn't try and like get through to her or like change her mind. I thought that that showed her growth and kind of like street smartness, you know. The only thing I would have liked to have seen was Omega to react more when Ava said that Emery gave her the doll. She's the only one that's here or whatever. I was waiting for either a look or a like response to that. She didn't. She kind of gives a like, she stares at the character and then looks off and is like, oh, how, you know, the watching, how many are they watching or whatever, how long. I just wanted some acknowledgement. That's it. But other than that, I really liked it.
Yeah, I know. I was kind of waiting for that to be a bigger moment.
Just something.
It rolled by pretty quickly. It almost felt to me like, and I agree with you that I would have liked some beat of emotional processing from Omega. Like the way that it made sense to me is that she just wanted that to be, you know, she didn't want to take that away from Emery. Like if there's a possibility of building a connection between the kids and Emery, you know, if she had made a thing of it to the kid of like, actually I made that. And yeah. But I totally agree with you that I would have liked some reaction, a little bit more reaction from Omega. You took it in stride.
Yeah, or even noticing the doll. The first thing, she doesn't say that right away. If that was my kid and they had seen a doll that they had made and they sat down, the first thing they would say is the doll. That would be the topic of discussion. The fact that it's the second thing, that was interesting to me. I don't know. It's a choice.
Yeah, there have been moments throughout the Bad Batch like that, but in like there was that beat that I got hung up on several episodes ago where Omega tells him that Emery is there and she's a clone.
And they're all like,
an adult lady clone who's a scientist for the Empire we never knew about. Anyway, what's for dessert? Like they're you know, it's similar to you. It's like, all I wanted was like a pensive look for a moment of let's put a, you know, a pin in that. And it was just like, they didn't seem to give a damn.
That's a moment where I do feel like this show is incredible with giving acting performances from these animated characters. That's a moment in live action that, you know, you would have seen a flicker of something in the actor's eyes. And certainly in that scene that you're mentioning with the Bad Batch, you might have gotten one reaction, a glance or something. That's the only time where I'm like, but
Yeah.
I'm nitpicking.
Yeah. But I think it's good to discuss. Is there anything that we have not talked about that either of you wanted to touch on, Ken?
No. I love it. A short and direct episode, deep on so many levels, but just ratcheting up that tension for the final two episodes, which is, yeah. So maybe it all happens. Maybe Boba Fett shows up, Cad Bane's chasing him, Asajj Ventress comes back, Papoose. I get it. We're kind of joking, but I love what they're doing.
I think it's Boba Fett is a clone, but I think it's going to be all clone all the time is what it's what it's feeling like. Yeah. Maybe Saw will show up and mess everything up.
Yeah, Hondo, Meeber Gascon.
Hondo, Jarl Poof. You know, come on. Oborensis, come on. Let's get in there. Jennifer, anything else that you wanted to touch on?
No, this show is fantastic. I love this pace. I love this type of episode. For me, it was not a mission of the week filler type thing. This is the kind of character development that has drawn me into the show and made it one of my favorites. So keep it coming until the big birthday party.
Yeah, great character development before the birthday cake. Get him in the minivan. Yeah. These are some of my favorite individual beats, fist bumping moments in this episode that when I rewatch it with my wife, I'll be like, I can't wait until we get the abort the mission negative because it's just such a great beat. And also, I really think it is worth the time to make it extremely difficult to get to Tantus because it raises the stakes and it's. That we've had over the years lots of rebels just throw on an outfit and saunter in this place. And that's
right.
Tantus has got to be different when it means this much to Palpatine. So I think it's worthwhile also for that to slow walk, get into Tantus. Final thing we always like to talk about is if we could have any figure or merch of any character or idea from this episode. Ken, who or what do you want?
I think there's a golden opportunity here. We identify what that game is on Wrecker's pad, and then they sell it. What are we doing? If it's Angry Birds 6, fine, but there's some, so I want that. I'll play that.
Yeah, it'd be great if Wrecker was playing some version of Angry Birds, which is the perfect game for him to play. And Hunter's reading some spicy romance novel.
No.
Oh, wait for Echo to show up. I'll throw this out. I would like an action figure of an actual overheated Gamorrean that comes, shirtless with a fan. Give me an overheated Gamorrean action figure. I'll snatch that up. Jennifer, what action figure or merch would you want?
I want a gentle giant statue of, is it Sammy? The blue kid? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With holding the space bunny. I want that. I want that.
Yeah. Sammy cradling a bairn. That's
little, right.
There was some quality bairn time, too. That was sweet. Yeah. That was sweet. Well, that is it for this look at this episode of Bad Batch. Can't wait for the last couple episodes. Ken, do you want to take us home?
I do. Hey, we're the Force Center podcast and show. We are on social media at Force Center Pod. Just search. You'll find us over there. And we're also on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. YouTube, if you're watching here, why don't you consider subscribing? Hit that button. Get those notifications going. Don't miss an episode. Go catch the Jedi beats that are already up there. The Legacy of Carrie Fisher episode is up there. Take a peek at that as well. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Also want to highlight at the end of the month, April 26th, 2 p.m. Pacific, we'll be doing a live stream, our monthly Q&A live stream. We've titled it, How Will Bad Batch End? It's time to have fun and theorize. By then, we'll be getting ready for the finale. So join us there on YouTube. Follow me at KatNapsock or go to my website, KatNapsock.com. Check out my YouTube channel as well for my live weekly show, The Blathering. And I'll have a birthday edition this week. Jennifer, where can they find you?
It's your birthday this Thursday?
Friday.
Friday?
Friday. Gonna get old on Friday.
Oh my gosh. Well, wish Ken a happy birthday, a happy early birthday. You can find me on all the social media sites at Jennifer Landa or TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
Love that, Joseph. You got a lot going on, but let's highlight the top ones because, you know, you're making things, you're creating things, you're writing things, you're doing a lot.
I'm trying. One thing that is made is our short horror film, Nightmare Adorable, which Ken does a great performance in, along with many other great actors. It's been playing all sorts of different places, Bulgaria and America, two nations. But there is a screening coming up in Seattle at a horror convention called Crypticon Seattle. It is screening at 9 p.m. on Star Wars Day on May the 4th. If Alaska Airlines is not entirely shut down by then, I will be there in Seattle. this coming Saturday. I think they're grounded right now. Anyway, doesn't matter. If you are in Seattle, I will hopefully be there as well. So if you want to come out to Crypticon Seattle and see the Nightmare Adorable, please say hello. Information on all that is on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. That is it. We are going to, just for now, abort the podcast mission, but we will be back. This has been the Bad Batch Report.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.